through writing this book, George, I have the experience of 45 presidents of the United States, their spouses, their key aides. It's a huge competitive advantage to be able to adapt those lessons.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Jason Voyovich. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Jason. One, he has a history slant to him because his three key facts are: one of his grandfathers manufactured the first disposable coffee filters in pre-Castro Cuba. Two, another grandfather invented the bazooka. And three, a great grandfather invented Neapolitan ice cream. The conclusion that you might draw from these facts is that he was destined to invent the first disposable ice cream grenade launcher, but the ice cream keeps melting. Jason Voyovich, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you so much, George. I am excited to be here. I can't wait to talk with people about storytelling in a historical context, of course. But as you could probably guess from that introduction, I am a natural born storyteller and I love it. It's the way people learn and it's the way people make sense of their world. And it just couldn't be more appropriate for, you know, for people to think about how your intended message isn't necessarily what people will hear or what people will remember, and how do we use stories to help make sure that they do, that they get the message you want them to get.
Now, Jason, it's worth noting that you have a 25-year experience in the world of marketing, where you've launched dozens of products and services, but you've managed to blend, you've got an amalgam of your perspective is marketing, storytelling, and history. And you somehow blend them all together and come out with your unique perspective. Why is it that you see those three areas fitting together so well?
I think for me in my career, and maybe like others, I viewed studying history and learning about stories. There's that old saying that there's nothing new under the sun. And that if I want to know how to handle a problem I'm facing in product development or in marketing or communications or storytelling, whatever the case may be, there is a wealth of knowledge and experience that people have already had that experience, or they've had something like it in the past. What can I do? How can I learn from people who have came before us? Now, the trick, of course, in adapting history is history doesn't repeat itself. That's a myth, but history rhymes. And what you can understand about that is if you have a problem today in your business or in, you know, communicating with a particular audience or even a friend or a spouse, people have had to solve a version of that challenge before. And if you can read carefully and you can really internalize the lessons of history, you can use it as your own superpower. You get the experience, not just your experience, but through writing this book, George, I have the experience of 45 presidents of the United States, their spouses, their key aides. It's a huge competitive advantage to be able to adapt those lessons to the challenges I face today. So it gives me a leg up. And the great part about that is anyone can have that. Anyone can go back and they can carefully read history, read the stories, really enjoy them, and be able to apply those to things that are happening right now in your business or your life.
And the book that we're talking about is your latest book. It's called Marketer in Chief, How Each President Sold the American, wait for it, idea, not dream, idea. And what I find curious about your approach is that you have reviewed each of the American presidents from a perspective as a master, as their role as a master marketer storyteller, which is a different way of looking at. And I suppose that the chief of any organization, their key role is marketing, hence storytelling.
That's right. Every president since George Washington has needed to tell a story about the American idea. And that story changes over time, right? In the beginning, it was all about what was the American idea at all? You know, when we think back to that era in history, not only kind of United States history, but Canadian history that's intertwined with that at that time, we see that the idea of a government based solely on the consent of the governed, we think about that now as something that's pretty commonplace in the world. It was not at that time. It certainly was not the case in Europe. It was not the case in Asia, Africa, South America. This was a completely new idea, completely new innovation in government and how people had a relationship with power. So at that time, if you think about just like any new product coming into the market, you almost had to teach people what that meant. What did it mean to not have a king? What did it mean? You know, there was a lot of confusion at the time. People wanted George Washington to be a king because they didn't understand what kind of a government of laws and not people. They didn't really understand what that meant. George Washington, John Adams, Madison, Monroe, they had to help people understand just what the concept of that meant. Whereas a Jimmy Carter or a Ronald Reagan or a George H.W. Bush didn't face that same challenge, but they sure still needed to be storytellers. They needed to help people understand what did the idea of the United States mean that's different in 1980 than it was in 1780. Those are very, very different communication challenges, but at the heart of them all is storytelling and innovation and that evolution. And that's what the book tracks for each individual president, not just the big ones that we all remember, but we have chapters on Warren Harding and Calvin Coolidge and McKinley, all of those presidents we thought, boy, I think I learned about those in history class, but I really don't know all that much about them. You'll get an opportunity to learn a little bit about each president, at least from that perspective, and maybe hopefully find a place where you could learn a little bit more.
And so each of those presidents had a message to tell. And was the message always about the big idea?
It's funny when you think about, you know, the message of the United States and what needed to be communicated at any point in time. Just like any product evolving in the marketplace, the communication needs change over time. What was critical for George Washington to communicate was not critical to what John F. Kennedy needed to communicate. They're very, very different points in time, meant very different aspects of the idea. One of the stories I find the most interesting personally because of the storytelling aspect of it is the chapter that I wrote on James Madison. And the center of that story was the War of 1812. And we read about, if we read about this, the War of 1812 at all, and many times we don't, we go right from the Revolutionary War in American history to the Civil War, and we kind of skip over the stuff in the middle. What was fascinating though about the War of 1812 is the four major participants in the war, the United States, Great Britain, Canada, and the Indigenous nations in Canada, what you folks call the First Nations, all had a different perspective. They all looked at the experience, all of the facts of the War of 1812, created four unique stories about their experience in the War of 1812, and made completely different decisions as they move forward based on those stories, not based on the actual facts on the ground. What was so fascinating to me, George, is that you could take a look at the same thing from four unique perspectives and come up with four very different outcomes based on that. It was one of the most fascinating chapters in the entire book. I'm glad it's up near the front.
And that probably reminds us of when, take a court case where you've got half a dozen witnesses who all saw the same thing happen, but all have half a dozen versions of what they saw. And each of them is right in their own mind.
Right. I think one of the biggest takeaways for a business communicator audience is that we need to separate ourselves from the facts and the stories people tell about the facts. This isn't an excuse to lie to people. That's not it. That's not what we're talking about. But our minds are too limited to take in all of the facts of a circumstance. Even in the example you stated, George, where there could be someone saw a car accident on the corner, there could be thousands of individual little data points that are coming in. Our senses just simply cannot process all of that information at once. It's impossible for us. We need to, our brains absolutely do this. They take all that information in and they fit those disparate facts into a storyline. What's interesting, when you take a look at how psychologists have tracked that over time, what we discover is that the storyline gets grafted onto facts very quickly. And once it does, other facts get filled in along the way. Even facts that weren't part of the original data set, our brains make up the facts to help close the gaps in the storyline as we go. It's a powerful tool that you can take advantage of, where many business owners think, well, I don't have all the facts lined up. I don't have all the pieces to connect every part. Here's the thing. The trick is that if you get the story arc right, people will fill in the gaps on their own. It needs to be a compelling story. Once you have a compelling and memorable story, people will take care of a lot of the heavy lifting on their own. Their brains will do it automatically.
Now, that's interesting. That suggests that the story, that when you, as a marketer of any form, when you create a story, the audience that you intend the story for need to make the story their own.
That's right. I think when part of the skill of a communicator and a storyteller is to understand who you're talking to, you can get a sense for what their shared ideas, their shared perspectives, their shared way of looking at the world, facts they may have in common. A very simple example. If you're speaking with a group of people who all graduated from the same university at the same point in time, you may be able to point to common experiences they may have had, common professors they may have taken courses from, a construction project that may have been going on at the time. You can touch on those facts and understand that you don't need to provide all the details of that construction project. You just need to hint that it played some role in the story. It prevented something from happening, or it made something else happen. And you can make sure to you can have the beginning of the story, and you can skip a lot of the details towards the middle part of the story, confident that people will be able to fill in those details. Now, let's say you take that same story and you're going to a Rotary Club speech where you're going to be presenting that same story to a group of people who do not share that experience. You may need to tailor what details you add or take out based on what common experiences they have. So the skill for the storyteller is understanding what are those key pieces, what is the minimum amount you can inject into the story to complete the story arc, because it is more effective to allow the audience to fill in their own details. When they do that, they make the story theirs. When it's your story, it becomes something that is much more difficult to dislodge. It's more memorable. It's really, when you think about Well, what is your intended message? Your intended message is a collaboration between you, what you want to say, and your facts, and what facts they have, what experience they bring to the table. Your skill is to put those two things together so that you can co-create that intended message. When you can do that, then you've got something that's memorable. Then you have something that will stick.
Now, if a marketer is presenting a story to their customers, their clients, if the customers have already had experience with the product or the service, they would relate to the story probably stronger, and they have their own version of the story to talk about the how much they love the product or the service. But if the audience has no understanding of the product or service, how do you craft a story that reaches them?
I think a couple of things that are important, and this is all about understanding your audience. Now, they may not really understand your particular product, your particular service, but what other common experiences do they have? What do we know about them? If you're in a kind of a business development or sales context, where did they go to school? What was their previous employer? What types of experiences do you believe they would have? So let's say you're in a situation where, you know, you're selling a customer relationship management software, like a CRM software package, and you're speaking with someone and you know they don't have experience with that CRM package. Have they had experience with other CRM packages? How about other marketing automation products? Maybe nothing like that. So they haven't done anything like that before. They're new to the business. Well, what are CRM systems like? Well, they could be like day planners. They could be like, you know, ERP systems, enterprise resource planning systems for more operations focused people. Your job as a storyteller is to be able to discover how to relate what you're talking about to the experiences they have, to kind of try to bring them along with you. Now, obviously, making sure that, hey, if they've got an experience of something that is not, that only has kind of light similarity to what you're talking about, you need to make sure that you're bridging that gap for folks. You can rely on a certain amount of information they may have. If it's another competing CRM system, okay, here's what I know about that one. Here's how this one's different. And let's tell a story about how clients use this one that focuses on that unique point of difference rather than something that they share in common. Because you can rely on a certain base level of knowledge, and then you focus your storytelling on the details that may be different. Again, a key way to help people really drive that is you absolutely must understand where they're coming from, what their experiences are, to be able to bring those together. You go in cold and you're just guessing.
In the movies, which are all about storytelling, can we take lessons from those stories? Can we learn from a Lord of the Rings? And is there something we can learn from those fantasy stories that can help us in our marketing stories?
The short answer is absolutely. When we think about storytelling and we think about, a lot of people think about, you know, the most recent movies that they've watched. They might have watched one of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. They may enjoy The Godfather. They may enjoy Catcher in the Rye. They may enjoy Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Whatever the case may be, those stories tend to have a few common characteristics, right? They don't have all the details, all the backstory. They allude to things. They kind of harken back to things that happened in the past, but they don't dwell on that. If you notice that any of the backstory in some of those movies is very brief, you mentioned Lord of the Rings. In that film, at the beginning, there's about an 8 or 9 minute sequence up front where it talked about kind of Lord Sauron and what happened before, but it didn't dwell on that. Very quickly, you opened with Frodo in the Shire. And that happened right away. Now, in your own story in a business context, you can allude to the backstory. You can tell a little story about that to set up the conflict that you're going to be talking about later, but that's got to happen fast. People aren't going to have that patience for a prequel. Okay? Most prequels aren't really all that successful. And there's a reason they're not. People like the story, they don't like the backstory. But think about that. Each story has a story arc. It's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. There are heroes. There are villains in the story. There's a conflict in the story that must be resolved. If you think about it, you graft that onto any movie you've watched, any book you love, every time, you know, Lord of the Rings. Let's continue with that example for a little while. If you think about, does it have a beginning, middle, and end? Well, they made three movies. So yeah, it's got a pretty good beginning, middle, and end, but each movie had a beginning, middle, and end. Okay? There were heroes and villains in the movie. Okay? The heroes we want to make sure are very well defined, and we go into a lot of detail to really understand them. The hero, unless it's an anti-hero that we want to learn more about, can be a bit more of a caricature of that villain. Okay? We want to really understand because we are putting ourselves in the place of the hero and we are fighting against the villain. We only need to understand so much about the villain and the villain's motivations. But again, we saw that in The Lord of the Rings. Of course, Sauron, the villain, and the red eye in the tower was there throughout the entire series. So we saw a reminder of that villain. But did we know a whole lot about Sauron? Not really, but we really deeply understood the fellowship and those members and all those related characters. We really understood that. Again, beginning, middle, and end, heroes and villains, and conflict. There was some sort of conflict. The ring needed to be returned. Ideally, you would have gotten on one of those big eagles and flown right there in the beginning, but they didn't do that because that would have made a much shorter movie. Here's the thing. In your business, I remember early in my career, it was a networking equipment products manufacturer, and they had a story arc. They were doing routers, and their big competition was Cisco. And it was all about Cisco was the villain. They were the hero, and they had a beginning, middle, and end to the story, and they were still in the middle. They were still in the conflict of the story where they were trying to defeat Cisco in terms of how they were so well entrenched with IT managers. And their challenge was, how were they going to do that? So every time they won a bid from Cisco, they celebrated that win as a win in the battle, but they were still in the war against Cisco. So again, it's not that Cisco was bad or evil or Sauron, but they really made their competitor was the one to beat. Now, is that a little bit of an old school way to look at things? You bet. Sure, it could be. There are a lot of different types of stories. I think from a business owner's perspective, you need to think what kind of story arc makes sense. Is it a story arc where two people kind of come together and find each other and, you know, and collaborate to some greater end? Perfect. There are a lot of Disney stories that are great like that. Or is it a story where there is overcoming an obstacle, like a hero's journey? Well, if you think about what movies speak to you, and which ones do you remember? What is your business problem like in terms of a movie? What if your business problem was a movie or a book? What book would it be? What movie would it be? And then take out the names and put your names in there and see how well it fits. It'd be a great way, kind of a great shorthand way, because most of us are not novelists. We need a little help, but this would be a great way for business owners to do a really practical and frankly, a really fun way to think about how they're going to communicate their next year, their next 5 years, their next forever in their business.
Other than promoting your product, your service to the marketplace, it occurred to me that storytelling might be a valuable technique for team leaders to use in their team meetings. You know, when they're meeting with their team, whether it's the weekly meeting or the monthly meeting, but to have a story to tell to get their message across so that it sticks with people.
Absolutely. I've One of the best sales people I've ever had the pleasure to work with in my career would have the standard stand-up sales meeting. 15 minutes, you review the data, hit. Everyone's got their tasking. What he would do at the end is he would make sure to be thinking in advance of who was he talking to on the sales team that had a good story from the week before, something that happened well, something that didn't go so well, something that a client was doing that was exciting, and would always save the last 5 minutes at the end of the meeting. It'd say, "Hey, George, I'd like you to tell the story about XYZ company this week that you talked to. Talk to me about how it, you know, what's the backstory quickly? What happened this week? What was the conflict you resolved? And then what are we going to do next?" And he kind of had a formula for how you would do it. It was a storytelling formula. What was so great, it had two great impacts. Number one, everyone remembered the story. And he chose the story strategically to emphasize a particular thing he was concerned about the team learning or embodying in that next week. But the other thing is that it makes George feel pretty darn good to share that story and to kind of be on stage and be performing a little bit. He knew what he was doing. He knew that stories have a power not just to be memorable, but also to make people feel like they're part of the action. And in this case, each person each week was the center of the action. They were the hero in their own story. That's pretty cool. It was a great way to do team building. Retention was never a problem on that team. Everyone wanted to be a part of it.
Now, it occurs to me that storytelling might be a safe or easy way to brag.
You bet. If when I talk about here's how great I am or here's how great our product is, that's fine. But most of the time as sales and marketing professionals, we talk about third-party endorsement or earned media or public relations, whatever the case may be. What we're really hoping for, right, is that someone else will brag about us. Okay. But we don't always have that luxury, you know, to kind of wait for that to happen. You're not in control of that story anymore. If it's truly earned media, that means the media will have a say in how they tell that story. And they might not tell it exactly the way you'd like them to tell it. Storytelling is a way that we can make sure to have control over that narrative. And it puts, especially if we put someone else, we put our customer, we put our product user at the hero of that story. How did they use our software to accomplish something that they needed? How did they, using our product, help make their life better? We put them at the center of the story. And then we can kind of brag a little bit, but it's not us. The real hero of the story is our customer. And we put them on the pedestal, yet we're still telling their story. I think that's what a lot of businesses get wrong about case studies. And when they write case studies, they're writing case studies from their perspective. They're writing case studies about what was the problem we faced? How did we solve it? What happened after for us? And sometimes at the end, they might have a little quote about what it meant for the customer. I would suggest you completely throw out that idea and instead think about it completely, make the customer the hero of your case study. Talk about yourself a lot less in that context, and your story will be more effective.
If there's a hero in the story, does that mean that there always needs to be a villain?
That's a great question. Sometimes the villain is what makes a good story is that the conflict in the story. The villain doesn't have to be personified. The villain can be the circumstances. The villain can be a misunderstanding. I remember many of us remember the story of Sully. Captain Sullenberger. He landed the plane. They hit a goose, some sort of big bird, on takeoff out of New York. had to land in the Hudson, and he was able to kind of save everybody on the plane, quick thinking, the whole deal. Wonderful story, really great film. The villain in the story, who is the villain? Well, the villain's not the goose. I mean, poor thing, you know, kind of an innocent bystander, a bad day for the goose. Is the villain the aircraft that was damaged? Not really. The villain really was the circumstance that the captain and the flight attendants and the co-pilot, they all needed to overcome this challenge. The villain was the circumstance. When you look at the movie, Tom Hanks is in this movie, as I recall. The thing I didn't like about it, and where they made the wrong choice from a storytelling perspective, is he was in kind of the Transportation Safety Research Board. In the United States, they have a, anytime there's a major aircraft incident, they go to a hearing to kind of get all the facts out. They made the investigators into the villain. They made government bureaucracy and them asking questions of this hero into the villain, which when you actually read the transcripts and you actually read the history that was there, they weren't the villain at all. What the filmmakers made the mistake of doing is assuming that the villain needed to be a person, when in reality, the villain was simply the circumstance. And it was enough that he overcame that challenge. He didn't need the government bureaucrat being bad in that story. It was an unnecessary part of the story. And frankly, it made it a not very successful movie, because it didn't fit. Most people couldn't tell you why it seemed off. It's because there were two villains in the story and you only needed one.
In your book, Marketer in Chief, you look at the role of each president as a chief marketer and chief storyteller. Did some of them use the concept of conflict and enemy villain better than others?
Absolutely. When you think about who were the most successful presidents and who were the least successful presidents, it's very often you can graft their ability to tell a story onto their ability to be a successful leader. Some of the most successful are the ones that are obvious. Abraham Lincoln was not just an excellent storyteller, he was an excellent joke teller. And that's a unique type of story that is different than kind of the hero's journey. There's a unique formula in how to tell a joke properly. And Abraham Lincoln, most people don't know this, was an absolute master of that particular art. And I break down his joke telling skill in that chapter, in chapter 16. Fantastic. But it doesn't have to be that. Teddy Roosevelt, for instance, the enemy was sustainability, the issues with sustainability in creating the National Park Service and creating places for the natural world to exist outside of other interests. There are plenty of examples of great storytelling, but I think the one that I mentioned before about James Madison, his ability to take the narrative of the War of 1812, a war, frankly, that the Americans lost. There's almost no other way to put it. The British decided they were done with Napoleon and they didn't need him anymore, so they just got up and left. The Canadians at the time, they didn't really call themselves Canadians at that time. They did afterwards, because when they worked together, they beat the crap out of the Americans in almost every engagement. It was just embarrassing. Okay? The First Nations, Tenskwatawa, Tecumseh, the leaders of the Iroquois Confederacy, were the most brilliant tacticians on the battlefield, no question about it. The Americans, if you were to rank 1, 2, 3, and 4, the Americans were at the bottom line, the worst performers in that conflict. But that's not how James Madison spun it. He was able to create the hero image of Andrew Jackson from a military perspective, William Henry Harrison as a successful general, a few successful naval engagements on the Great Lakes. You know, kind of not really big deals. They should have just barricaded the St. Lawrence Seaway and it would have done everything, but they didn't do that. It just really not a great military success. He was able to create John Quincy Adams as the negotiator of the Treaty of Ghent. You know, so when you think about the heroes he was able to create in this story of we won this war as a United States of America, not a United States of America. He was able to put that together and create more of a unified nation versus 13 colonies, because before Madison, James Madison, if you were to ask people what they were, they would have said, I'm a Virginian, I'm from Massachusetts, or I'm a Georgian. They wouldn't have said they're an American. After Madison, they would say they're Americans, and Canadians would say they're Canadians, which was a fascinating way to think about how to turn an utter disaster into a success. Stories can do that.
You know, I just love when you admit that we beat your ass.
Yeah, no, it's hard to anyone who reads that. And I've read plenty of histories, and there are plenty of battles here and there where, you know, okay, the Americans scored a good tactical point here and there. But it's hard when the British burned down the capital and the Americans were thrown back across the river to Detroit, to Chicago, at almost every turn. How do you call that a win? It's better to just understand and respect how powerful the storyline is in creating this narrative that we won. It's an amazing power. And that's why I wanted this chapter right up front in the book to drive home that your intended message is your intended story. It's as simple as that.
And a reminder for listeners, the book Marketer in Chief, you can find that at all the regular booksellers. And you can also find more information about it at the website. The link is in the description. The website is marketerinchief.com. That's where you can learn more about that book. Jason, in drawing to a close, if you could... and perhaps you've done this already, if you could sit down with a leader of an organization and give them one, two, or three techniques or tips to help craft and deliver a better story to their team more consistently, what would that be?
I think number one, if you want to tell better stories, you've got to have a better understanding of your audience. Unless you have a better understanding of your audience, it's going to be hard to know how much detail needs to go into the story. What do you need to put in? What do you need to take out? And what types of story would they respond to? And which type of story might they vibrate against, might kind of rub them the wrong way? Got to understand your audience. The second tip, there are lots of other tips that, you know, in your own practice, George, you talk with people about how to present better and how to show themselves better. And I'd love to turn the question around on you in a second and what tips you have. My first tip is know your audience. My second tip is think about the story you want to tell as if it were a book or a movie that you like. What was it about that? What were the key details? Who were the key characters? Can you swap out those characters with you and your characters and your team? If you can do that, you'll start to get a sense. You'll have that kind of scaffolding that you need in order to kind of fill in the right details to tell your own good story. And here's the thing, you already know it's a good story because it works. You'll discover that lots of stories have lots of similarities. There are only a certain number of archetypes of stories. So know your audience. And think about how you can leverage what history has already taught you is a good way to do it. George, I'm curious, from your perspective, what tips would you give that same person about how to deliver a better story and deliver a better message?
And I'm glad you asked that because it is a question I get often. And the key point, and as we discussed, is that the audience needs to be able to see themselves in the story. They need to be there. And when you are telling the story, you need to connect with them visually and emotionally. because those vision and emotion is what triggers their memory and triggers their imagination. And there needs to be a point to the story. If it's funny, that's always a bonus, but that's not necessary. Too many people think, well, I'm not very good at telling jokes. Then don't tell jokes. Just tell a story with a point. And just a very quick example, I told a story about my son playing soccer when he was, playing mini soccer, when they're about, 7 or 8. And I described the game and how the game came to a halt when there was this beautiful rainbow and everybody stopped on the field. But I described it from the side of the field, watching my son playing and my frustration when he stopped to stare up in the sky instead of getting after the ball. And then finally I look up and then there's the rainbow. And the point was that people could sense my frustration and they could see the rainbow.
I think that's a great story. You know, the point of that story is I immediately got was that pay attention to your surroundings. Don't just assume that you're getting frustrated that your customer is not doing what that you want them to do. Look up. You might see what they're staring at.
Powerful lesson. My guest today is Jason Vojovic, who offers stories and perspectives from history, because even though history doesn't repeat itself, it does rhyme.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.